I had to go in person. I had to fly to this city and fire these six people.
Oh, no.
One person had twins in high school that needed to go to college. Another person had a young person in college that had just started. It was not a nice thing to do.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we learn from executives and founders who are changing their companies and industries about what they uniquely see and how they identify talent and see things that others don't. If this is your first episode, welcome. We are so excited to have you. To our longtime listeners, we really appreciate your support. I am so excited for today's episode. I've had a longtime relationship with Martha, and Martha Ramirez is the Chief People Officer at PayCargo. Checking in. Martha, how are you?
I am doing great. How are
you? So listen, I'm doing awesome. People are going to look at this. They're going to be like, what is Oz wearing? I am wearing a gladiator outfit. It is Halloween. We've got to start here. Are you doing anything exciting for Halloween? Do you got any plans?
I have a board meeting tonight with board members coming from out of town. So I'm going to be very boring.
Whoever scheduled that, shame on them. This is supposed to be a night of festivity and fun, and you've got to prepare for a board meeting. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun, I promise.
You're going to make it fun?
Yes.
All right. I love that. So listen, we'll start here. We always love to understand your journey, your story, your company. So what can you tell us? You're the Chief People Officer at PayCargo. I want to know more about the company, and then I want to know what drew you to the role, because you worked in very large enterprise environments, and this is a different type of environment. So I'm interested, what drew you in, and tell us about the company.
All right. So I'll start telling you a little bit about the company. We are a South Florida fintech company created in the garage of one of our founders that is still here. He worked for the cargo industry in the marine shipping lines and found a niche that he thought that if he started growing this concept of how he could facilitate the movement and clearance of cargo and making the process of payment smoothless, he could build a really interesting company. So again, from the garage of his company, he started this concept, started developing, started partnering with other industry experts. They found the concept industry, and that was the birth of PayCargo about 15 years ago. It's been a nice journey. The last 7 years have been of consistent growth. The year of the pandemic was a significant year of growth, and it was the first year that we got fundings to grow the company. We got fundings from Inside Partners, which is one of the top tech investors. And then a year and a half later, we got fundings from Blackstone. So it's been quite interesting to see the growth in these 4 years. I was hired in December of 2020. My first assignment was to bring people back to the office because they were working remote then. And
that must have made you popular.
Yep, I guess. So why did I take on this job, Rash? Why did I take on this job, Oz? I had worked for very large companies, as you said. My upbringing into the professional world is very unusual. My very first job was with 57 men. My English was broken back then. That was 1983, a very long time ago, many years before you were born.
And that's not true. But go ahead. Keep going.
And I started my role at American Airlines as the first woman loading bags on the airplanes with 57 men.
So like the people when I'm on the plane and I see them like really tossing my luggage in a very like non like fragile way, you had that job. You were loading up the planes with the bags.
That was Martha Ramirez back in 1983.
God bless you.
Going inside the belly of the plane, loading the bags, putting them in order, all that chaos that you don't know anything about, waiting for the dogs and the cats to be boarded last, etc. That was Martha.
Wow.
So I had a beautiful career at American. I think I worked there for 16 and a half years, and every other year I changed jobs. So I, as you could tell already, I am a high energy person. I had the very, very, very amazing privilege to be on a company that valued training, that valued timeliness. Back then, the logo for American, or the saying for American, was the on-time machine. And timeliness was something that was super valued at American. I was always early. I was never late. I never was absent. I think in 16 and a half years, I had perfect attendance for 15 years. So, and that means that I was never 1 minute late and I was never absent. We did have the benefit of swapping days and things like that. So that created a little bit of flexibility. But I was always very responsible with my job. And that gave me opportunities to move slowly upwards. At the same time, I was going to school full time, working full time, and learning English. And then that was how my professional career started. How did I end up in HR? A lot of the responsibilities that the supervisors at American Airlines had were part of owning that piece of HR. We didn't do recruiting, but we did all the discipline, all the onboarding, all the counseling, all the documentation of discrepancies, etc. So for me, it was a really, really smooth transition.
Wow. So it's interesting, and I want to draw some parallels here because we have some early in career talent. I know we have some college students that have listened to the podcast. And so there, let me be clear, there is no one way to success. But you and I had kind of a similar path from this perspective. I remember when I interviewed back in 2005 with ADT, the big corporate organization, I remember telling them, they were like, my background wasn't in technology. I was interviewing for a role in technology. And I told them in the interview, you know, they're like, why do you want this job? And I said, listen, you can make me the janitor and I'll provide so much value in 6 months that you'll have no choice but to promote me. Well, they liked that. And so they didn't bring me in as janitor, but it was kind of a level right above that. I was literally creating the training, the digital training, right, for the help desk. So I really came in. I wouldn't say it's, you know, quite the same as, you know, the bag handler, right? But we both came into these entry points. I took my work very seriously, as I do today, right? And then I just started taking on more and more and trying to learn and showing that I was somebody that could be trusted and reliable and that could provide value. And eventually ascended my way up the organization, got promoted, you know, 3 times in 4 years, much like it sounds like you did. So if anybody's listening to this, right, and you're figuring out, well, what's my path or what am I going to do? Because the market's very different now than it was in 1983 or 2005 when I made this same decision. Getting in with a big brand name and just getting in the door and then coming in and just being unstoppable from a value perspective, a reliability perspective, showing that you're somebody that can be counted on, that can lead to great things on in your career. And so I want to point out that parallel that we had there. And then, like you said, you know, sometimes, you know, most people I meet in HR didn't intend, I'm in HR, I didn't intend to get into HR. It's almost something you fall into. And that's a similarity we have as well. And so as you did that, you were working at American, like you said, for 16 years. And then you were working at companies like DB Schenker and DHL. These are really big organizations, right? Mm-hmm. Enterprise level organizations. And one of the things that I've always found is that, you know, being able to succeed in that environment is very different than being able to succeed in a startup environment. So making that jump, there's like working for a founder versus working for like a, you know, a 10-pronged management layer that you do in these enterprise organizations, very, very different stuff. So I'm just interested, that point when you came to that decision, I imagine you had opportunities to get into this type of space before. What about this one made you feel comfortable that this was the right startup for you to go to and that this is where you wanted to start to take your career?
All right. So I was worried that I wasn't answering your first question, and I'm so glad that we came to it. Yes, I had the privilege of working for these large organizations in which we were able to implement a lot of different things, a lot of initiatives. What attracted me to come here was the opportunity to create HR from the bottom up. My last two jobs in HR had been to really revamp HR. At Geodis Wilson, which is another very large forwarder, French forwarder, they had just done an acquisition that expanded the growth of the company to Latin America. And I had worked with Latin America at American. I had worked with Latin America at IATA. So when I came to Geodis Wilson, I was able to create this team. And also, start with a lot of the processes to formalize the HR function in the Americas. When I went to DB Schenker, was a similar thing. The focus of HR was very administrative, very payroll and benefits driven. And I was able to work with a team and with a global team to create new initiatives that would actually would be focused on the people, would be focused on the development of the people. I am a student at heart, Oz. I think I'll be a student until the day I die. I like learning new things. I like experimenting with new things. Last year, I took a Hebrew class. I learned the Hebrew alphabet. I learned to read in Hebrew. I don't know how to speak. I know a few phrases, but I'm always trying to find ways in which I can challenge myself. And when I got the call for this job, I was actually doing some consulting on my own, and I was surprised that I was doing so well. So the person that called me had worked with me in the past, and he said, "You need to pay me." I was like, "No, buddy, you need to give me a contract with your company because I'm working on my own for a few months." And lo and behold, he goes, "No, we have a very interesting position. There's no HR in this company. This is a startup that we just got some very nice fundings. We need to position to grow." And I came, I met with a CEO, and lo and behold, I was in love with the opportunity to start creating a function. Now, mind you, at DB Schenker, the team that I had 238 people in total.
Wow.
I came here by myself. Came here to do payroll. I came here to do benefits. I came here to create an employee handbook, to create policies. And guess what, Oz? I had no problem doing that.
That's awesome. And listen, I look at myself as a builder and a creator. It's not for everybody. Some people want to come in and support and maintain. What are the fingerprints of a marked? Because you had to have this vision of like, okay, I'm going to do HR my way. I've seen it a bunch of different places. Like, what were kind of like the core philosophies? What did you want your HR organization to represent since you were really getting to build it from scratch?
To me, my main focus was on people, right? I think there's a saying from a book that I love that is called Die Empty by Henry Todd. And he says that the seeds of tomorrow's brilliance are planted in the soils of today's activities. So to me, doing things that are simple, that are easy to digest, that are easy to understand is where the magic happens. And I also like to work creating fundamentals that are going to then start developing things, you know, start planting little seeds. I couldn't do a handbook in 3 months, but I had a new sales team that I needed to hire that didn't have an expense and entertainment policy. So I started with that, you know, hey, listen, we're hiring 7 salespeople and there's not an expense and an entertainment policy. Boom, let's put one together. So, and back then there was no ChatGPT, you know, I had to be very resourceful to start creating something that that it was easy to introduce in a very small environment, even with people that had been here for a little while and never had a policy. So that's how I like to work. I like to start simple, start little, and then from there, get better.
Bill, I love that. So one of the things that you and I are, again, there's a lot of similarities here, Martha.
I love it.
We're very passionate about talent. And you have hired throughout your career great performers. But one of the things I found interesting about what you saw and what you identify is that you didn't necessarily always hire for capability. In fact, you were way more focused on competency. And not just getting too focused on like their resume or their functional experience. I've heard that before. I've tried to do some of that myself. I'm interested, why has that worked for you? And then like, can you give us an example of like that situation where you hired on the competency and it paid off for both you and the person?
Okay, I'm gonna start with my philosophy as a leader. I think the most important job that a leader can do is to nurture the growth of those people that are around you, the ones that report to you and the ones that you have the capacity to influence. So for me, that is critical. it's very easy to hire people that have all these accolades, that have all these experiences, and the leader has it much easier when it's like that. But I don't know. I like challenges. I like it the hard way. So I do like to hire people that have the capacity to collaborate, the capacity to learn, the capacity to do whatever needs to get done to get the job done. And that for me has worked.
I want to pull a little bit of a thread there, because once you hire somebody that maybe doesn't have all the experience, they're not necessarily always going to hit the ground running because there's some learning and ramping there. What can a leader do to ultimately ensure that post-hire, that person with kind of that raw skill set, what are maybe some more formal things you do over the first 6 months to a year of that person being on board to ensure their success?
I think you have to be very clear on what's the outcome that the organization expects from the HR function to deliver. So we were very clear on the fundamentals that we needed to build, and along that, a critical aspect was the recruiting, because the company was growing so rapidly. So giving her the capacity to learn how to recruit, what questions to ask, what things to look for, how to create some sort of internal discernment, but that is matched also by the responses and the examples the person gives, was a critical practice. I invited her to participate with me in the interviews. She did interviews with me at the same time. We walked through that process together because it was so critical. It was so critical for me that the people that would come to work in this company were the people that were going to help us propel to continue to grow. So that is an example of very hands-on approach that I took to help her succeed and be effective in that area of recruiting.
You know, I got to say this, and I don't want to say waste because that's the wrong word, because you obviously learned so much about your career, but you are such a natural creator and builder. You were destined for the startup world from the beginning, right? This is something that, whether it's helping create and build people and develop them, which you can do at any organization, obviously, but also getting to build your own HR for organization. I can just see the passion in taking something that's not fully formed and helping it reach its full potential, and how much excitement that gives you. And by the way, that's the sign of every great leader, right? Awesome. If you talk to a leader and you ask them what their most important accomplishments are, and they're talking about the ones that they individually did, to me, that's a red flag, right? The ones where they talk about what they built with a team, what they inspired a team to do, how they developed a team, those are the best leaders. So I love to hear that from you. You are obviously a great leader and super passionate about building. So I appreciate that. I do want to make sure that we spend some time digging deeper into hiring, because you've done a lot of hiring throughout your career. You talked about the 238 organization at DB Schenker. I'm sure you didn't hire all of them, but I'm sure you had a big hand in bringing a lot of talent into the organization. So my first question there for you is, what is maybe a core hiring philosophy of yours when you're evaluating somebody? We know that capability, right, versus competency is one, but is there another one that's like a really stands out about things that you're looking for going into a hiring process?
I love to hire people that have to work.
What does that mean?
That means that you need to feed somebody, or you need to pay for colleges, or you need to pay for weddings, or you need to pay for a roof and food for your people. I absolutely love to find out what is the driving behind the person's need to have a job.
I love that, because I would make the case that one of the things that people miss in hiring, and this is something that we've been building into our software, it's something we train our recruiting and executive recruiting team at MSHs, is that situation and motivation are very, very important to longevity in a role. Capability and competency and behavior will get you through the interview process, but ultimately how you do in the work is driven by that motivation. And many times your situation, what that is, whether you're working two jobs or you're only can work remote, whatever it may be. Like, there might be different circumstances and situations that come up that can dictate your level of work. And motivation is also something that I just find to be super, super important. So I love that. People that have to work, people that need to make it happen, those are the people that ultimately end up being successful. And listen, not to take this into a completely different direction, but like, so why there's a lot of successful immigrants, right? Like, when you have immigrants coming from different countries and they don't have much and that they're here and they're grateful for that opportunity to be in this country. But man, like they are going to do everything to provide for their kids, to take it to the next level, and their kids like have those same experiences. So like that motivation, that proverbial gun to the head where you got to make it happen, it can be very, very powerful. So I love that. And that tells me that you don't just go standard, you know, interview questions, right? You're really trying to understand the person. So let me ask that. What is maybe a favorite question you have in the interview that you like, that you're known for asking or love to ask?
Okay. First, I'm going to wrap up a little bit of what we just talked. I love to hire people from colleges as well, from community colleges, because most of the kids that go to community colleges are somehow working. So to me, that's another niche that I can, maybe we can go into where to find good people, right? Because I have another philosophy on that as well. But there's two questions that I always, always ask. One is, tell me what are you super proud of, or what is the most significant achievement that you can claim, and what happened? How did you do it? I always listen if they did it alone or if they did it with someone else or with a team. That is one question. Because from that question, you can really assess the passion of the individual, the impact of what they did. Why do they choose this achievement versus others? And honestly, Oz, I leave the question wide open, even if it's something personal, even if it's something from the past when you were a student. But tell me, what are you really, really proud of something that you have done? Even if it's, a physical ultra marathon or whatever, you know, I leave the question very open. I don't corner the person to tell me about work. And then from there, I can expand. Another question that I ask is, tell me a time where you make a mistake, where you made a mistake, and what did you do about it? And I can learn so much from an individual. If I only have time to ask two questions, those are the two questions that I would ask.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
Well, I know you listened to the podcast before, so you know what happens here. I'm going to ask you, what are you super proud of? I'm putting the question on you, and then I'm going to answer it.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tell you that in 2019, I signed to climb the Everest in the United States. It's an event called 29029 Everesting. You go to a mountain, you climb so many times. Every time you climb, you come down on the gondola and you climb again until you have reached 29,029 feet of altitude. So I signed up for that. I started training in our beautiful flat Miami.
Yeah, the mountainous, beautiful Miami. As I look out and see the mountains. Oh, wait, no, that's a trash dump. There's actually no hills or mountains out here. Go ahead.
So there's a little mall in Tropical Park. I don't know if you've ever been in Tropical Park, but I live a block away from Tropical Park. And I train on that little mountain. I train on the stairs. And then I got really sick in 2020. Then the pandemic came. In 2020, I was turning 60 years old, so I wanted to do something super extraordinary. And I consider myself very fit. I take care of myself. I'm a health and nutritionist crazy. So I trained for that and it was canceled. So I continued training. The event was postponed for August of 2021. And in July of August 2021, I was diagnosed with a myriad of things wrong with my lungs. So it was very difficult to get to a pulmonologist because COVID was still very, very prevalent. Hospitals were full. Pulmonologists were really hard to get. I finally got into one. They did a lot of tests and they found a lot of things very concerning with my lungs. I won't go into details, but it was quite scary. and I had the event in a month. So I was put on medication. I went to the event. I went with inhalers. I went with albuterol and whatever, with my mask, you know. And out of, I think it were 250 people that signed up, and 160 finished the event. I was one that finished it. I went with my nephew, and it was a wonderful experience. Considering all the scary things that were going on my body and the extra effort that it took, I consider that one of my most recent significant achievements.
What an incredible story. That is amazing, overcoming that type of adversity in a very adverse time, and to be able to accomplish something like that is truly incredible. I'm very impressed. I'm going to give what I'm super proud of, and it's going to maybe pale in comparison, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I think as I've gotten older, one of the things that I realized, I actually read something about this the other day, the two most important decisions we make early on in our lives, or relatively early on in our lives, is our career path and who we decide as a partner, right?
Oh, so I agree with that.
And if I look at my career professionally, it's worked out, but I wouldn't tell you that I had a very intentional path there. It's almost happened by happenstance, or just taking advantage of opportunities, hard work and all that good stuff, but also some luck and timing and all those things, right? And so then I reflect on my marriage, and I've been married for 15 years, and I'm very much a believer that anything I'm able to do professionally is in due in part to the fact that I selected the right person to get married to. And I have to tell you, it's not very romantic, but I had kind of a checklist. So I've famously made the stories about how I dated a lot in college and met a lot of different people. I moved to South Florida. I dated a lot, really trying to learn a lot about what I liked, what I didn't like. And so I had a pretty strong idea of like, okay, these are the things that are important to me that I really need.
You wrote a list of what you wanted in your partner?
Yeah, I mean, it was more.
I did that. I did
more. You did that too? Yeah. Okay, I did. And so I had these boxes that I needed to check that I thought would be really, really important for me. And ultimately, I met my wife and we started dating. And I wouldn't say like right away I knew, but then like all of a sudden, like all these boxes were getting checked, right? And then one of the boxes was like her family, right? And so I went and met her family, and I was like, oh, okay, this checks a box too. This is like real. This is genuine. This is authentic. And then, you know, she told me her role model was her mother, who was a mother of five and a housewife, and her husband was a doctor, and she had a lot of pride in that. And that, you know, as somebody that knew that I really wanted to do some things in my career, I wanted somebody that took pride in that, and that was important to them. We had the same values on a lot of things. We got a dog, and I kind of realized how she took care of the dog would be somewhat, you know, analogous to how she raised children. So anyway, obviously I was in love with her and all of that, but I felt like I went through that process and was very cognizant of what I was looking for. And I found it, and I asked her to marry me. We got married, and I look back and it's like, man, I'm really glad I did that. I'm glad I thought a little bit, not just with my heart, but with my brain. And I made like a good partner, life partner decision. So listen, I'm super pragmatic about it. You know, things can always like flip on a dime. I put a lot of work into it. She puts a lot of work into it, but that's the decision that I'm the most proud of, because it's allowed me to do the work I've been able to do. I have four wonderful kids, that I feel really good about their trajectory. And so that's what I would say there. And you know, what's funny is that, you know, I've mentioned her on LinkedIn before, and I've talked about it on the podcast. I promise you, I'm not saying any of this stuff for her. She doesn't listen to one podcast. She doesn't look at anything on LinkedIn. She has no idea I say this stuff. So all this stuff is happening in absence of her. But that's why I do it, because I want her to, it doesn't matter that she knows it. It matters that I feel it. So anyway,
I'm a firm believer that it transcends, even if she doesn't hear it.
Well, hopefully she feels it too. Not every day, maybe even not this morning. but certainly is important to me that she understands how important she is to me. And I'm very, very grateful for her. Love that. Okay, let's go back to the hiring goal kick.
Yes.
What about a memorable interview experience? Maybe you are interviewing, maybe you are interviewing somebody else. You don't have to name names, but I'm just interested. Is there a memorable interview experience that comes to mind for you?
I needed to think about this a little more, but I can tell you a memorable interview experience in a previous job was with one of those ladies that became one of my mentees. I'm going to get choked up. She was 18 years old. Had just finished high school, and came very humbly to find a job as a receptionist or whatever entry role. And at that time, we didn't have a role per se, but then very little after that, we were able to find her a job. This girl had gone to school, I was going to school, and started working with me. And very, very slowly, she started to demonstrate, we're going to the interview. So she came very humbly, very non-experienced, had never done an interview, fresh out of high school. And she was one of those people that was able to communicate very clearly why she needed a job. My mom is a single mother. I want to start working so I can help my mom. I want to be in an environment in which I can have a mentor. So to me, that opportunity to get to know this young person and her desire to start looking for someone that she could trust or looking for an opportunity that would give her a chance to be of help for her mom. Just the things that she said, maybe I'm not being able to express very, very vividly the way that she came across, but that is one interview that continues to resonate on my head throughout the years. This young girl now is a director. She has built a beautiful career. She works very hard. She's a mom. She has two beautiful children and a wonderful husband. She's a great professional. And that for me is one of the most memorable interviews.
I could visualize it as you were talking about it. That's a beautiful story. And like you said, it goes back to that motivation, right? Why do they need that job? It sounds like that story really stuck out with you. What about when you miss? Right? Because we all miss, right? No one's bats 1,000 when it comes to hiring, right? Is there something that you look back on that you're like, I wish I would have done this different? Or is there any type of commonality when you miss on somebody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You, at least for me, you start getting flashbacks of all the little warning signs that you saw at the interview and that you said, maybe not. So yeah, absolutely. And the more you have seen that happen, the more intentional you are in the questions that you ask. I'll give you an example. I hired an entire team from a company to another to come to work in sales. These people, some of them, it was a team of, I want to say, 6 people. Some of them had been in that company for a long time. They have built their career. Some others, not so much. But it was a wholesome team. And I failed to ask the question, is there anything that you need to tell me that you haven't told me that I need to know? I also failed to ask the question about if there was going to be any restrictions or anything in the whole team transferring. I obviously wasn't the hiring manager. I was the HR person. 6 weeks later, after they were in the company, we got letters upon letters that they had a restricted agreement, that they couldn't work for us, that they had to, stop everything that they were doing. And I had to go in person. I had to fly to this city and fire these 6 people.
Oh, no.
One person had twins in high school that needed to go to college. Another person had a young person in college that had just started. It was not a nice thing to do. So I think that I look back and that for me was a very, very eye-opening learning lesson.
So what I hear from you is ignoring red flags in the interview and then also not being comprehensive in the questions you ask to get to the root of every aspect of whether this person would be a fit. It wasn't just about capability, wasn't just about results, wasn't even just about behavior. There was other components like situation, like I talked about earlier, how that's a big aspect that led to that being a miss. I will empathize with you in that. And I've told this story before, but we opened an office in Colombia, Medellin, that unfortunately we had to close in under a year for reasons outside of our control. I too had to have that same tough conversation with people, and it was not good. It was not easy. I'd like to think that, in adversity, my character comes through the most, but that doesn't make it any easier. And to be honest, those people weren't happy with me either way, because the outcome is the outcome. So I can empathize with you that, and you were trying to do your best, and it doesn't always happen, and it impacts people's lives. And so I just think the best thing you can do in that moment is show up the way that you did and take it on the chin. And it sounds like you did that. So I commend you for that. Wow. So we got a ton of great hiring juice there. I have some follow-ups. We're going to get to our lightning round in a minute. All right. I usually ask about a great book you've read. You mentioned Die Empty by Henry Todd. Anything else about that book that if people want to read it, that you would give them as kind of a primer?
Oh, I'm a book reader. Can I tell you maybe three of my favorite books?
Please. Oh yeah. Right. I'm into this.
One that I really like is Write It Down, Make It Happen by Henriette Clouser. It's a small little book, but it does have a lot of practical ways in which the habit of writing things down, writing your goals, writing your next actions, writing your dreams, is super, super critical. I recommend that book to all the young people. Okay. Die Empty is one that I like. I love anything that has to do with making the most out of your time. You know, David Allen, Getting Things Done. I forget the name. I think it's called Newman, Deep Work. All those things for me are very motivational in ways in which I can utilize my time the best I can and get stuff happens. One of my very favorite books is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, because it's very, very wholesome and comprehensive in everything that has to do with you as an individual, with your relationships, and with your goals. And the second favorite is The 8th Habit, which is also from Stephen Covey. But that one centers on the uniqueness contributions of human beings and how leaders need to nurture that individual growth. For me, in my role as HR, in my role when I interview people, I always want people to feel valued, to feel that they, even if they're not good for the role, I want them to have an opportunity and a remembrance of the interaction that they had with me, in which I respectfully valued them and engaged with them.
I love readers. I love that you're a real reader and that you have all these different books that you love. I feel the same way. One of the seminal things that happened early in my career, I think it's right when we started MSH, is I took with my partners at the time a 7 Habits training in Chicago. And God, that was just so good for me. It was like, it was really like, looking at those different things, building them into my work. I think about them still constantly. So that was a really, really, really good recommendation by you. I haven't read The 8th Habit, but it sounds really interesting. I'm going to check that out. last question, then we go to lightning round. If you had some advice to give 20-year-old Marta that you didn't know then that you know now, maybe it was, toss the bags a little bit, more gently in at the cargo at American Airlines. I don't know. But what's some real advice you'd give 20-year-old Marta?
What's the real advice I would give my 20-year-old Marta? Don't rush so much. Things happen when they need to happen.
All good things happen in time, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Don't rush so much. Good stuff. All right, we're going to do some lightning round here. So the first thing I'm going to ask you is, we're going to go back to hiring for a second. I'm going to give you 3 celebrities. And what I want you to do is I want you to tell me, without interviewing, which one you'd hire and why, okay? I picked celebrities that I'm pretty sure you know, okay?
Let me just confess, I'm bad with TV, I'm bad with series, and I'm bad with celebrities.
If you don't know who these celebrities are, we're just going to have to stop the podcast.
Go ahead.
Elon Musk, Taylor Swift, and Lionel Messi. Who are you hiring and why?
Who would I hire? I think I'll hire Lionel Messi.
Why?
Because he's just so good at what he does. I also like the fact that he's not going to be known, that he's not going to be in his essence for much longer as he gets older. But the impact that he has had through the years that he had the opportunity to perform has been unbelievable. I also love the fact that he married his sweetheart, that he's a family man, that he is super committed to build and sustain his family. I love all those things about him.
Good answer. Absolute magician. He's going to lead more by example than word. He's local. So that's important. You can get him to come into the office. Although I'm concerned about the motivation. I don't know if he needs the job, but we'll deal with that.
I think that he'll take it.
He'll take it. All right, good. You got a good opportunity. All right. Now I'm going to assume you've traveled all around Latin America.
Fair? Yes, I have.
Okay. So favorite place to visit in Latin America?
Latin America. Can I stay in the Caribbean?
Yeah, you can go central to Latin. That's fine.
Okay. My favorite, this is a complex question, so I'm going to try to answer it simple. My favorite place that I would love to visit would be the country where I was born, which is Cuba, because it's an amazing, beautiful country. Unfortunately, because of the circumstances, I don't go there. So my second favorite country is the Dominican Republic.
The DR. I'm actually going there in 2 weeks. Any recommendations?
Yes, I have.
Okay, good. We'll talk offline. Favorite cuisine in Latin America? Can't say Cuban.
Peruvian, by all means. I just came back from 10 days in Peru. I went to Machu Picchu, and everywhere I went, the food was just amazing. Absolutely. Hands down.
Peru. I get that answer all the time. Peru is the favorite.
Yeah.
What is the most beautiful place you've been in Latin America?
The most beautiful place I have been in Latin America. Let me think. I've been in quite a few. I want to say on the outskirts of Colombia, the mountainous parts of Colombia, I have been able to go to a few of the haciendas, and it's just very peaceful. Second one would be Costa Rica. So they compete, but yes.
Very different geography.
Yes,
that's awesome. I love that. And last one, best monument or historical site to visit in Latin America for you personally?
Okay, I want to say Buenos Aires, the on the central street, the monument that they have. I'm going to butcher the name. I don't recall the name, but it's impressive.
Is it like a mosaic? Is it a statue?
No, it's like a pyramid. Pyramid. In the middle of the Central Avenue.
There's a pyramid in the middle of Buenos Aires in the Central Avenue.
I don't know if it's a pyramid.
I know. If we could afford a production team, we'd have them looking this up right now and telling us what it is. That's okay. We're on our way. If we keep bringing up like Celsius and LaCroix and LinkedIn, eventually they're going to sponsor us, and then we'll be able to have a crack research team ready to go.
It's the Pirámide de Mayo.
There it is. The Piadi de Mayo?
Pirámide de Mayo.
I'm not even going to try.
It's actually in
that.
Front of their Rose House, like would be our White House for the United States.
All right. So here's what we got. Yeah. We found out about your career. We talked about how to develop high-performing talent. We know where to go eat. We know what to go visit. We know who you'd hire. Lionel Messi be working at PayCargo. Anything else?
Yes, I guess that.
Because here's what, Marta. I want to make sure I want to do fix what you did when you didn't ask that last question. Is there anything else that we should know to the anything else we should know?
Yeah, I think that something that is really deep and profound in my heart is, if I had like a magic wand, that everybody would take care of their mental and physical health. I think that is very critical for the overall well-being, for your happiness, for your joy, for your peace. And that all obviously starts inside of you. And if you can find the place and the way in which you can obtain that, I think the mental and the physical piece can come along very much more easier than if you do.
That is great advice. And I have a bunch of different ways that I do that, but one that we've talked about that usually helps center me, read a good book.
Oh, yes. And walk at the sunrise also, you know.
Walk at the sunrise.
Walk when the sunrise comes up and listen to Andrew Huberman and all the benefits that you get from walking in the sunlight.
Or Higher Learning. Listen to Higher Learning. Marta, it's been an incredible time. It's such a good discussion. I'm very appreciative of you coming in. You're doing some amazing things at PayCargo. I'm excited for people to hear this episode. Thanks so much for coming on.
Very honored, Oz. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all you host. And thank you for this work that you do as an extra opportunity for those to continue to grow.
I love to tell these stories, and you did a fantastic job telling yours. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.